Good morning, baby witches. I hope Mercury in retrograde is not being too rough on y'all. I hope many of you have had a chance to do that self-care bath. If you haven't, I hope you get a chance to do it or at least have found some other way to care for yourself during this time. Jumping right into things here, guys. I wanted to go over some crystals with you. I know I had mentioned before that there are crystals that you don't want to get wet, that you never want to put in water. And so I was just going to go over some of those with you. Calcite, you don't put it in water, it'll fade. The carnelian salt can cause fractures in that. So don't put it in, salt water or salt. That I would just use my selenite for. Galena, it'll rust. Halite will dissolve. Hematite can rust. Labradorite can dissolve. Lepidolite will flake apart. Lodestones will rust. Malachite can break in hot water. In water, it's also toxic. You don't want to put your hands in that. So I guess it turns the water bad. Mica will flake. Moldavites can flake apart. Opals, they can crack, break, and fade. A pearl can lose its luster and break. Pyrite, be very careful. I guess it produces sulfuric acid when you put that in water, so might not want to do that. Selenite will dissolve. Turquoise can fade. Obsidian, all forms of it can break if it's extreme liquid temperatures, like hot or cold. Eulex can dissolve, angelite, celestite, muscovite, they should also not be put in water. So those are some of the things that you'd never want to put in water. Like I said, when in doubt, be sage it or lay it on a selenite, sit it next to selenite to cleanse it. I rarely use water for cleansing my stones. I'll use water for cleansing other things, including myself, like a new moon or a full moon water. But I won't use, I can't think of, I'd be hard-pressed to think of a time when I used water for cleansing a stone. There are just other things that you can do that aren't going to damage that stone. Okay, so the other thing to know is citrine, kainite, and azurite, A-Z-E-Z-T-U-L-I-T-E, that those crystals are self-cleansing and they don't ever need to be cleaned. Clear quartz and carnelian, they cleanse other crystals, so they're good for cleansing your fragile water-soluble crystals. But they do require cleaning themselves. If you keep a carling stone and a bag of stones, and you'll never need to cleanse your crystals. And then all you'd need to do is clean that carling, every once in a while, and I would probably sage that. So they do say when crystals are not in use, it can be helpful to wrap them in silk or velvet cloth to protect them from scratching or energy transference. Always when you buy a new crystal, you want to cleanse it. I just sage. And then anytime you use a crystal for healing, you want to cleanse afterward. Always, even jewelry that comes to you from someone else that can pass on energy, so cleanse that. Your tumbled stones, they're tougher and can be kept together. Other crystals should probably be kept separately to avoid damage. If you've got them all in a bag, then you pick up that bag, they're going to be jostled around inside there, and they may cause other pieces to break off and nick off and that sort of thing. You don't want that to happen. Okay, sweets, moving on from crystals. Let's talk about the waxing moon, because that's what we're going to move into. The 23rd is the new moon. That's when this podcast should be popping up. And I gave you a little ritual to do on that, or you've done some research and found one for yourself to do. The waxing moon is the growing moon. It's getting bigger. That's the time to do things for attracting desires into your life, success, health, money, love. It's a good time to call back lost objects. So kind of one of the things that you can do is for calling back lost objects, it's as the moon returns, so does whatever it is that lost object that you're looking for. And if you kind of do a ritual and recite that frequently throughout the waxing moon, then the goal would be is that with the return of the full moon, so would be the thing that you're looking for. Another way is, not just necessarily an object, but maybe you're seeking clarity on something. You're looking for an answer for something. Another incantation that you can do during the waxing moon is, as the moon grows, so does my understanding. And you can do that. And then hopefully the goal would be is that with the return of the full moon would come your answers, that you're looking for and seeking. One of the ways to think about it is from the new moon to the full moon, the moon is growing and getting bigger. And so during that time, that's the time to do things that you're trying to bring in things to your life or expand things in your life, do more positive things like that. And then, of course, on the full moon would be like your most powerful point of that. So sometimes people who, there are people who will do just one spell, boom, done. But then there are people who, just like any other thing in life that we take on that becomes a part of who we are, there's daily practice and there's setting intention. And then, there's working at it. You don't just pick up a guitar and start playing a great song, right? You also don't just, if you are a guitar player, you don't just play it 3 times a month. You find yourself, going to that several times a week, maybe even daily. So there are things that you can do, spells that have, and I feel like a lot of them have better results, is when you're doing multiple times. So like I said, with that, say I'm looking for some clarification. Say I've got some really big decision to make and I'm just not sure what to do. That as the moon grows, so does my understanding. You could do that with, candles that are going to represent like, intellect and or whatever it is that question is resolved around or that you're looking to seek clarification on, or simply just a purple candle. Is purple's going to be kind of your psychic intuitive, and so you're wanting to tap into that, right? And to kind of help guide your path or whatever decision is that you're trying to make. And if you did that frequently throughout the waxing phase, you're just setting that into, you're just giving that more and more of yourself, and I think that it's going to work better. And then, and part of that is when you're doing that, you're going to meditate on this thing that you're trying to figure out or come to a decision about. And so in that process, you're going to start to see things that you might not have before. And so you may not just wake up on the day of the full moon and boom, instant clarity, but as you're doing these sessions, if you will, meditations throughout the waxing phase, you might gain bits and pieces here and there that help you decide to make that final decision, that help you get to where you want to go or give you clarity on what it is that you're seeking. It doesn't necessarily even have to be about making a decision. It just be something you're really confused about. A lot of times we look to think that someone else needs to provide the answers for us, or in a situation where another person's involved, a lot of times we feel like we need to get an answer from them, when the reality is you just need an answer for yourself. So like one of the things that I would speak to is I see a lot, especially with females, where they will post and ask for truth spells or, you know, how do I find out if he's cheating? I think he's cheating on me. How do I find out if he's cheating? There's a bigger issue there than cheating if you're thinking that your partner's cheating. And so that's one that I would do with that is that as the moon grows, so does my understanding. And really meditate and contemplate on the relationship itself, on what's going on, because you might find your own answer without having to inflict anything on that person as far as like a truth tea or a truth spell or any kind of thing like that, or banishing the other girl that you think might be involved. Those things tend to not end well anyway. But when we do things that are more self-focused in that sense, that are how am I looking at this situation? How can I see what I need to see? How can I make the best decision for me? Those have better results. And so that's what I would suggest doing in those situations. And again, you don't have to do them nightly. Nightly would be great. But if you just several times a week working up to the full moon, you know, do that incantation, if you will, if that's what we want to call it, spell, and meditate on it. And, see yourself coming to an understanding, see yourself learning what it is that you need to learn, as opposed to trying to force something on someone else. Because there's one thing I've always just been a fan of and a big believer in, and that's, I have said, truth will always find a way. Truth, to me, is like a force of its own. It's a will of its own. And I just wholeheartedly believe that it'll always find its way. So it's best to just tell the truth, because it'll find a way. When you try to hide the truth, it's almost like this entity that says, not gonna happen, and it finds a way, and in the end you're kind of bit in the butt. So not sure where I was going with that at this point. But I'm not a big fan of how can I cast a spell on my significant other to have them tell me the truth. But what I am a fan of is doing things for your own clarity and understanding, and let me see what I need to see. Allow me to see what I need to see. And you never know, that may be, I found exactly what I needed to found, caught them red-handed or something. I just feel like that's the best approach for those types of situations.
And then, so let me clarify, I'm not saying that you have to do things daily and nightly. I know that that's been a source of some gatekeeping contention in the community, that somebody who doesn't have a whole lot of time is like, well, I guess I'm not a witch because I can't do something nightly. I can't do something weekly. You know, your level of commitment is your level of commitment, and that's not for anybody else to really judge. Just like any other, path out there, there are people who commit to it at various levels, and your ability to commit is for you alone to determine and for you alone to judge. Now, I will say that, you know, especially when you're first starting down this path, you just, if your level of commitment is very minimal, just don't get upset when you don't feel like it's working well for you. Because there are savants where there are people who, you know, can play music by ear and never took a lesson in their life and they're just amazing. Sure. But those people are not common, you know, and so, and that's not to say that every person who goes down this path, like, I firmly believe that everybody has the ability. Everybody has the ability to tap into these things. Some people do it more naturally than others. And so you have to, some people just have to work at it. And until it becomes something that is just very natural and reflexive. What I think about it is like kind of when I'm a nurse, and I can remember when I very first started critical care. I looked at all these other nurses when things would, when poop would hit the fan, so to speak, and patients would code or they were circling the drain, as we call it. And these amazing nurses that I work with, they were just, bam, reflexive. They just jumped into action and knew exactly what to do and were just doing it, right? And I was sitting there like, okay, what do I think's wrong? What do I go from ages and tease in my head? What do I do? What do I do? What do I do, right? And that's normal. That's natural for when you're new. And I remember thinking, I can't wait to be like those girls. And, you know, even guys, I don't want to sound sexist because there's plenty of good male nurses too, but I remember thinking like, oh man, I can't wait till I'm like them, and this is just reflexive for me, that I don't have to sit here and try to think in my head about anatomy and physiology and what did I learn about this and that, and if this is happening, how do I react, what is it that I need to do, what's my intervention, because you feel like that's delaying care, right? I mean, you just want to be good at what you do and do it. And it's the same way with this practice. The more you do it, you know, 4 years in critical care and I was there, you know, things were reflexive for me, for the most part. And it's the same thing with this path, is you have to, if you practice it, if you commit to it, if you put in the time, then you'll see those rewards. So it's, I'm not saying that, you know, I don't want to get into the thing of I'm more of a witch than you're a witch and this and that. That's not true. Witch is a witch is a witch is a witch, right? But if you're not feeling like you're getting what you need out of it, you need to ask yourself, am I putting into it what I want out of it? So, that's all I want to say on that. So shall we move on to an herb? Let's pick an herb. Something funny, Europeans say herb and we say herb. My spouse is European and we joke about that all the time. I say herb and my spouse says herb. So let's pick an herb. How about catnip? Catnip is part of the mint family, and apparently it can be used culinary purposes. I have never used it for culinary purposes, but I was reading that some people add it to their stew. So there's that. Medicinal purposes, it will help with cramps, menstrual cramps, digestive issues. And that typically is as a tea, and you can find catnip tea very easily online, you know, prepackaged even, or loose leaves. There's another thing that they say you can do with catnip, which I am probably going to try here soon, because I've never done it before, and I was not aware of this until I started doing some more research on catnip, is that it can be smoked and that it has a bit of a sedative-like effect when you do that, and that it also supposedly helps with respiratory ailments. So the inhalation of it, smoking it, is supposed to be something that you're able to do. don't want, I want to, don't just buy a catnip tea and assume you can break that up, roll it up into a joint and smoke it. Do your research. If you're going to try to do that, do your research and make sure you get organic catnip that is nothing but catnip, because you don't know what else might be in there, preservative wise, and whatnot, that is going to be not good to inhale. So let me just say that real quick. Don't go buying some catnip tea leaves, tea bags, and ripping that open, rolling a joint, and thinking, hey, I'm gonna, get relaxed, because you don't know what is also in that, chemical wise, even from just the bag itself that may have leached onto the leaves that you were then inhaling into your lungs. So I just want you to be very, very cautious with that, and maybe just go see an apothecary person or something. Make sure, just do your research and make sure what you get has got nothing else in it, before you attempt that. So I don't want anybody to get hurt. Catnip is also one of the reasons why I was looking into it, and I've actually started some seeds, is because it is 10 times more powerful than DEET as a mosquito repellent. And living in the South, I'm like, say what? I can get rid of mosquitoes. Sign me up. So yeah, I'm growing it, and who knows, maybe I'll grow a bunch of it and I'll make some sprays with it too. I'm planning on making sprays with it to spray us down to, keep the mosquitoes at bay. And then I'm planning on making maybe some oil and doing essential oils that I can infuse into candles and make my own little candles for the back deck that will hopefully keep the mosquitoes away as well. So we'll see. That's my plan. That's the hope. Going back real quick, the tea is also has a sedative effect too. So, and they say mugwort and catnip together can actually cause a bit of a euphoric feeling. So, it is it's also a known to make you sweat a bit, so it can be helpful when you have a fever, as it will increase perspiration, which kind of helps to get that infection out of the body. It helps to detoxify. It can be used in your bath to help with sore muscles, and then it helps with the sleep. It does, even like I said, in the tea, it can also have that sedative effect. It can increase appetite too. So it's been added to sauces, stews, and soups for its flavor and to help improve digestion. Magically speaking, its leaves are often used in love spells. It's known as the woman's love herb. It's said to make women enticing and charming. It attracts good spirits and great luck. It can be used in beauty and happiness spells. If you hold catnip in your hand until it's warm and then hold it in someone else's hand, they'll be your friend for life. Think we've talked about catnip before, but I know there's extra stuff in here that I've not mentioned. So, if some of this is a repeat, I apologize. I'll give you another herb just to make sure that I give you something extra today as well. Okay, so I think catnip, this is not the first time I talked about catnip, so sorry for that repeat. But since I brought it up, why don't we move on to mugwort, and I'll give you a little info about mugwort. Mugwort seems to be kind of popular. When you watch shows about witchcraft, it always comes up. Medicinally, if you create a salve with it or a lotion, it relieves itching and severe burn victims. And this is information that I got off of WebMD. Remember I said WebMD will actually give you information about herbs. So that's a pretty good thing, I think, that they're doing now. But they will say insufficient evidence for, but at least they're, I think that that's a step in the right direction. Stomach problems, colic, diarrhea, cramps, constipation, vomiting, epilepsy, irregular menstrual periods, low energy, anxiety. So mugwort can actually kind of bring on your menses. So they say that pregnant women should not take mugwort. And that's typically as a tea. Most people have mugwort tea. I have heard where you can use the tea bag and apply that to the skin. Like, so you have a bruise, you know, keep that, go ahead and have some tea and then let that bag cool down and then apply it directly to the bruise. I've heard that that's helpful as well. Magically speaking, mugwort is pretty powerful stuff when you look at it magically speaking. It is said to increase psychic abilities and intuition, prophetic dreams. It's said to bring about lucid dreaming. Having a cup of catnip and mugwort tea just before bed. And also I've read that, you know, catnip, smoking a little catnip and drinking some mugwort tea can actually cause some euphoria, some feelings of euphoria. I don't know that to be a fact. I've not tried it. But yeah, you could, put mugwort under your pillow to make a sachet of it. If you didn't want to drink the tea, you could, make a sachet and put it under your pillowcase, and that's to help with having those lucid dreamings or prophetic dreams. Prophetic dreams are something that I have had all my life, and I keep a dream journal, and so that's what I would encourage you to do. If that's something that you're going to do, keep a dream journal. I just, within the last year or so, have basically started to kind of embrace this because it's not going away. I must be a slow learner, because this was happening to me before I ever even got into witchcraft. First incident I ever remember was in the eighth grade. My parents are divorced, and I was living with my mom, and I ended up moving in with my dad, and it was a traumatic thing. It wasn't just a, hey, I'm going to go live with dad for a while. It was very traumatic, and I had a dream that I was in an art room, in a classroom, and I was drawing a house, and I looked over my shoulder, and the sun was shining in the window at this specific angle, right? And when I moved to go live with my dad, within maybe a month of having done so, I found myself in an art room, drawing a house, looked over my shoulder, and there was the sun at that angle. And it kind of dawned on me like, oh, well, that's weird. I've dreamt this. And I've had things like that happen all my life. And it's usually the dream itself is pretty insignificant. But the thing that it is related to is usually very significant. And as I've gotten older, it's just kind of gotten, I would say, gotten worse is what I used to say. It's just gotten worse. But that was because I didn't really embrace it. And I more feared it, I guess, because typically what would happen is because I kind of didn't embrace it and tried to ignore it and didn't pay attention, the ones that I would notice the most were when typically something not so positive would happen in my life. And I would get anxiety. I would start having them where the thing would happen and I'd be like, crap, I dreamt this. Something bad's coming, you know, and it would give me anxiety. And so now I keep a dream journal, because I'm trying to more master it than have it be a source of anxiety for me. I figure it's gotta be a gift of some sort, and it's not a gift to just give me anxiety, surely. So that's where I'm at with that. That's what I would encourage you to do is keep a dream journal. I keep mine at my bedside table so that because oftentimes you will find that you'll wake up and remember your dreams, and 10 minutes later you're like, I don't remember. I have no clue what I just dreamt. I knew I dreamt something, but I don't remember what it was. So wake up, write down your dreams right away. The other thing I want to encourage you to do, I personally use tarot. If you use tarot or some other oracle cards or another source of divination, I suggest that you get a almost like a student planner. That's what I have is I have a, it's not a student planner, but it's a large notebook size calendar book. So each day has plenty of space to write on. And I will draw my cards for the day and I will write them on, I'll write down what I have. And so like I'll write, the cards and what their meanings are. And so then that way when things happen, I can kind of go back and look at it and go, oh, okay, yeah, there it was. Yep. And those things, they help to just they help you learn because by not only by writing down like, oh, okay, I've got the sun card is like one of the most positive cards in the major arcana. It's a sign that, success and everything's going to be okay. You're writing that down. So you're starting to learn those cards too, so that in time you can start reading for other people and you'll be flipping those cards and you know what they mean. You don't have to go back and like look in the book and go, okay, this is this and this means that, right? Because you've used it now and you've written it and that's a form and then and it validates. It helps you validate. So then you build confidence in your ability to use that deck and to, receive message from that deck. And that I think is a good thing. So I would encourage you to do that as well. Or whatever source you're using. I would encourage you to keep a journal of it. Just help it helps you kind of validate and say, oh, okay, yeah.
Okay, as previously promised, I'm going to end each segment with a little bit about Astara to kind of help you guys prepare for the next Sabbat in the Wheel of the Year so you can kind of be prepared for it and celebrate it and enjoy it more. There's a really good book called The Magical Year by Danu Forrest, and it goes into detail about all the different Sabbats. In the Wheel of the Year, gives lots of history. And there's some information on here on page 63 that we're talking about fertility in spring, right? And another animal prevalent in Celtic fertility symbolism is the snake or serpent, sometimes thought as a dragon. Often associated with the male phallic energy, snakes were also connected to Earth's fertility and the primal life force of creation. The Iron Age Druids had a secret object known as the serpent's egg, which, according to Roman writer Pliny, was a ball of twisted snakes used for occult purposes. In fact, the Druid serpent egg was most likely a special stone of some kind used as a powerful magical tool. The serpent's egg is likely to be related in some way to Astara with the Orphic or cosmic egg from which the universe is said to be created and symbolizes the limitless potential and grandeur of both the cosmos and ourselves. Complete within itself, it is a symbol of initiation as it is twice born, laid, and later hatched. It is therefore not only a symbol of physical fertility, but also spiritual fertility, our higher selves emerging into incarnation. That the world itself is hatched from an egg is an ancient, almost universal idea. In Hindu lore, for example, the egg was laid by a divine bird on the primordial waters, and from that sprang Brahma and the heaven and earth. In Egypt, Ra, the sun god, comes from a cosmic tree that grew from an egg produced from the mouth of a serpent. So, becoming conscious of our potential, the spring equinox is a good time to consider balance in our lives, not only of happiness and sadness, but also in the areas in which we are active and passive, successful and falling short, giving and taking. There's an exercise in here that you can use, and it's you stand upright and take three deep breaths. With each breath, visualize yourself pulling energy up from the earth into your body like a warm golden light until your whole being is glowing. Then stretch out your arms to your sides at shoulder height. Feel the balance or imbalance in your body. Turn to your left side and focus on your left hand. This is where you receive from the world. With every in-breath, you draw in new life and energy. In your mind's eye, objects and symbols appear in your hand. What do you see? What do you feel? These objects and symbols represent what comes to you from a world, what you receive, what you draw in. This would be a good time to ask yourself if what you see corresponds to what you need, to what you desire from the world. Do you receive what is good for you and your whole well-being? Now turn to your right and focus on your right hand. Again, objects and symbols appear, and here you will see what you give out, what you express or send to the world. With every out-breath, you give back to creation. What do you offer the world? What do you give back to life? When you are ready, with your hands still out to get to either side of you, draw your attention to your center, to your heart. Do you feel a balance between what you give and what you receive? Do you receive energies or objects you don't need and can give away? What do you attract? What do you release? Spend time in the quiet reflection, feeling with every in-breath and every out-breath the balance within you. If you feel it's time to end this exercise, place your hands over your heart for a moment to close down your energy. You may choose to make some notes in a journal and record your insights. This is a way you can become more conscious of how you negotiate your way through life and make more empowered decisions, attract and call in what you need, and let go of what does not serve you or what you can freely give away to all creation. Another thing you could do is a spring equinox craft. You can make a flower mandala. So you could make a simple mandala out of flowers or greenery or with candles to place in your garden or even on your table or altar. So a good design is equal armed cross or a sun wheel, four-quartered circle. These symbols invoke balance as well as representing the turn of the year. Or you could do a pentacle or a five-pointed star. As you create the mandala, remember that every action in its construction is a prayer and an act of honoring and blessing. So just the creative possibilities are endless. It's the act of doing it. So you could begin with four large petals or flower heads, such as a daffodil or primrose. Primrose is edible, by the way, and it's also considered, I believe it is, yeah, it's sacred to Freya and various other flower maiden goddesses of the British Isles. So yeah, you could use primrose. And then use smaller petals or leaves to fill in the spaces between the arms of the cross. Use another type of flower or leaves to make a circle around the cross, laying them down in a clockwise direction to attract blessings. You can continue creating new layers following as the design you're choosing with flowers and leaves that add different colors and textures. If your mandala is going to be used on the altar or even just as a table centerpiece, you might also choose to add a candle in the center, which could light as part of your equinox ceremony. So that's a way to incorporate that into your magical practice and give you something to do between now and then. You could be making it, although it's about a month off, so it wouldn't start just yet. But you could be planning it. You could be designing it in your head and determining what kind of materials you want to use. All right, sweets, that's it for today. On the next episode, I think I will address more stuff just about the altar. We'll try to do some of that. Again, I hope you have found this helpful. Feel free to email me at eclectickitchwitch@gmail.com. eclectickitchwitch@gmail.com. Brightest blessings.